The NFL draft is less than a week and a half away. We have plenty of prospects to talk about here on Jet Nation Radio. I'm Glenn Naughton with JetNation.com. Be sure to log into JetNation.com where you can register and become a part of what is the most active Jets message board on the web. Joined, as always, by co-hosts Dylan Terriman, Chris Schubert. We're here to talk draft. We're here to go over Chris's guys because he was Chris was busy last week. He's here to let us know who he likes this week. We're going to talk about the Jets' top 30 visits. Who's been coming in? What do we think of these guys? And we might even discuss a little bit more Aaron Rodgers slander via the internet because you can never get enough of that. How are we doing, fellas?
Doing good. I mean, last show before the draft is kind of crazy how quickly I know it feels like it drags on and on, but then all of a sudden the calendar turns April and we're here and I'm excited. Last one before the draft, and then we're going to be sitting up here live waiting for the 10th pick. It's going to be great.
Well, we do have another Wednesday before the draft. I don't know if we were going to do.
Okay. That's so right, we're gonna double dip. We're gonna do a Wednesday and then a Thursday.
Yeah. Okay. I'm good. I'm in. Thursday. So cool.
Okay. That's fine.
Go live Wednesday, or we'll see. We'll play it by ear. Anyway, Chris, how are we doing?
Doing well, guys. I mean, it is that time, right? You can feel the buzz. You can see all of the reports, all of the rumors. Everybody sharing their final thoughts, trying to get it in under the buzzer. But it is like Christmas for us who love this stuff. And I am somebody who is relatively new to this scene, only been in it for what, 2 or 3 years now. And it continues to get more and more fun. The more I dip my toe into it, and the more we get to experience it here on the show, covering the draft here from all different perspectives. So excited to share my list of guys for the 2024 NFL draft. And again, we are a week and a day away from what is like Christmas Day for a lot of us.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we'll do, Chris, like I said, you weren't here last week, so you can read them off and give your explanation, what you like, what you don't. And if Dylan and I have any thoughts on any of these players, we'll chime in and throw in our two cents as well.
Sure. I mean, there was a version of this. This is the final version, but there was a version of this that was just Ricky Pearsall at every position. But I figured that was not going to be a good banter for the show. So I figured I would absolutely get more players here on the list. I will go offense and then defense. I'll lump them all together, and then you guys can just dissect by position group. So for offense, I've got, and let me just make something very clear. I'm not going to be the person that comes up here on the show and my guy is, I like Brock Bowers. I like Marvin Harrison Jr. Like, that's not what we're doing here.
We avoided that last week. Very briefly mentioned our favorite guys, but if they were like top 15, 20 types, we weren't going to, like, I mentioned Bowers, but I wasn't going to talk about him.
Yeah. I think Joe Alt are first rounders. So,
yeah. I love Joe Alt. I love Talese Fuaga. Yeah. Like,
All right. Well, thanks for the valuable depth there. Yeah.
So, my hope is that all of these guys are players that are day two beyond players that I'm really kind of being like, these are my guys that I think are going to be special. And I had a couple of them hit last year, right? Like Puka Nacua was a big one for me. Kendre Miller was a big one for me. Ivan Pace was an undrafted free agent. That was still a good one for me. That was a big win for you and I, Glenn. So that's what this is about, right? We try to plant our flag in the ground for somebody and try to get that victory. So for me on offense, I've got Michael Pratt out of Tulane at quarterback. I've got Tennessee's Jalen Wright at running back. I've got two wide receivers, gentlemen. You all know the first, Ricky Pearsall out of Florida. The second one, and I know this is somebody that Glenn likes, Jacob Cowing out of Arizona, another guy on my list. Tight end, I've got Theo Johnson out of Penn State, and I've got two offensive linemen for you. You guys know how I feel about Jordan Morgan out of Arizona, potential late first-round pick, depending on how the board falls, and interior offensive lineman Zach Frazier out of West Virginia. So those are my guys on the offensive side of the ball that I'm willing to call my guys for the 2024 NFL Draft.
All right. I mean, a lot of those guys, like Pratt, we've talked about. I like Pratt. The one thing that gives me pause with Pratt is I look at the arm strength and I think late season, December, whether can he throw it into the wind, make the throws that guys like Josh Allen, thinking back many years ago, guys like Ken O'Brien, like, do you have that arm in that weather? Other than the arm, and I'm not even saying he can't. I'm just saying I think I've watched four of his games. I haven't really seen him rip a throw, 20, 25 yards downfield. So can he do that? I'm not sure, but I'm not saying he can't. But everything else I like from Pratt. Right? One of the most – I have to try to separate this from the Jets because I'm thinking I don't want the Jets to take a back. Jets don't matter. Fantastic player. Fantastic. A lot to me, like the guy that I loved last year, Izzy Abanikanda, where the Jets drafted, gets the ball and goes. He'll be one of the fastest guys on the field. Very explosive. Cowing, I mentioned a little while ago in a tweet, actually, as one of the guys they should be considering as a slot. Theo, I was a player who jumped out right away in Mobile for me. I know, just saw, literally saw him run like two or three routes, and he ran a couple of outs, and the quickness, and I thought, I can't remember if it was you, Dylan, or Dom. I said to somebody, I said, I had no idea Theo Johnson was that quick. And he was. You can see how he can be a guy who creates some separation. Zach Frazier, interesting one. I saw Duke Manyweather, who I think most people are familiar with by now. I saw Zach Frazier mentioned in a few tweets and somebody saying, you know, Zach Zinter could go, you know, in the late 20s, early 30s, something like that. And Duke Manyweather chimed in and said, you know, like, man, I know teams that want him way before that. So we'll see. That's a lot of people are going to say a lot of people are going to go in the first round, and there's only 32 slots. So some, not everybody will. But and Morgan, we've talked about, I think he'd be an excellent pickup if the Jets can add a late one or an early two.
Yeah, I think in terms of Pratt, I think you have to have the discussion of arm talent versus arm strength. And I think he definitely has all the arm talent, not so much the arm strength. And I think I said this a week or two ago on the pod that Zach Wilson just throws fastballs no matter what, even if it's a 5-yard hook route. Like, but Pratt is kind of the opposite. He does not throw the ball with a lot of velocity. So that's the one interesting thing with him. But I do like the prospects of him. And the Jets have done a lot of work on him as opposed to the guys that we brought up last week, Glenn, like Rattler. They haven't really done too much work on him. Right, explosive, obviously. Like you said, I don't think he's going to fit the Jets' need, obviously, in terms of where his value is, but I like him a lot. He's really special. Your wide receivers, I don't know. Pearsall kind of grew on me throughout the process. Florida people just kind of like, I don't know, they scare me after all the misses that we've had, but Pearsall is like the exception. Cowing, I thought he was okay in Mobile. I didn't really like love him. But Theo Johnson, yeah, Glenn, you hit it on the head. He definitely surprised me. And I think that there's that opened my eyes to the value of tight end in like the early day three range. And I think Theo's right there. Frazier, if it wasn't for JPJ, probably would be the first center taken off the board in a lot of people's opinions. So I think that's a really good pick. And Jordan Morgan, yeah, we've talked about, probably could it be like the 30th pick of the, you know, the first round if everything fell right and there's a run on tackles. So that's definitely a good pick.
This was a combo of me. There are guys on here that I would love the Jets to get, right? Like I would love them to get Ricky Pearsall as part of a trade down and then maybe get Jordan Morgan and Ricky Pearsall. I've talked to you guys about that being one of my dream scenarios for this team potentially on draft day. But there are guys on here that I just like at the position, right? Jacob Cowing's one of those guys where I got to see him when U of A played ASU and I was in the radio booth doing the stats. And again, I've got an all 22 angle and He's just all over the place. I mean, he just makes plays for that team. I think going to be able to make a team a lot better. Real quick on Pearsall, because I listen, if there's anybody who was early on the Ricky Pearsall train, it was me. Okay. I think everybody on the show can agree. I was early. There's a lot of late people on the back half of the train car that have found their way to hitch onto the wagon here for Ricky Pearsall. I got a lot of people joining in talking about Ricky Pearsall. Just remember who was first on this, because I'm telling you guys, this is a guy to me, and I hate to do this because I think this is really unfair, but we talk about the impact that Puka Nacua had as a late round pick for the Los Angeles Rams. I think if you got Ricky Pearsall in the right system as a day two pick, he is going to have that level of an impact for a football team, because I think he is that good of a player. He is Alec Pierce, but a better prospect, and is going to be a better pro. Like, that is who he is at his core. And to me, you get him in a system that is a Shanahan, McVay type system, and you put him in the slot, I think the numbers are going to speak for themselves by the end of his rookie season.
Did you see, I was going to ask you guys about this, so I'm glad you mentioned the Puka Nacua and that comp. And I don't know how much you've seen of this guy because it's small school, tough to find all 22.
Okay.
But did you see Jim Nagy's comp for Puka Nacua for this year's draft class?
So he compared somebody in this year's draft class to Puka Nacua.
Right.
Was it
at the Senior Bowl? And was it not
McCaffrey? Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense to me. I understand what he's going for there. McCaffrey's an interesting prospect too. He could have very easily made this list.
He was on mine last week.
MJR says nobody with Morgan arm length has ever made it at a tackle at NFL 32 inches. I think he can play tackle, but if you had to kick him inside, I don't think that would be a problem either. Like, I still like him.
We've talked about that, right? I think we may have spoken about that with Emory Hunt. I get where MJR is coming from, but. And I think that I saw this conversation actually last year. I forget who the prospect was, but it was, I could see he was driving Duke Manyweather nuts. Don't mess with O-lineman takes.
Duke in particular.
And he made the point. He's like, yeah, a lot of guys with arm length like that don't make it because no one gives them a chance to. They just assume when they walk in the door that they can't do it. Mm-hmm. And there was somebody in that class, I forget who now, who had short arms and has turned out to be a very good tackle. And Duke Manyweather's like, I tried to tell you, like, and I, you know, I, me and Emery Hunt talked about this when he was on Graham Barton. I look at the guy and I talked about this last week, Chris, and people may disagree and that's fine. But I'm of the belief that if I draft a guy, I'm going to first let him try the position that he showed he can play in college, like Graham Barton at tackle. And if he can't, fine, I'll move him inside. But what is the harm in saying, we're going to start you out here and see what you can do? And if you can't, we'll move you. But rather than just assume you can't do it, I mean, that's not a very innovative way to think. It's not like, do what you can to get the most out of your guys. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. That's fine. But there's no harm in giving a guy a look.
To a certain extent, I agree with that principle. And here's where I think I diverge from it a little bit. If I'm taking a guy at the 10th pick or inside the top 10, I better be taking him because I think he's really good at the position he currently plays. I shouldn't take a guy and go, I kind of think he's good here, but I know for sure if I kick him inside later, he's fine. This is why I'm not a fan of JC Latham as a top 10 pick, because I think he profiles more long-term at guard, and I don't want to be a part of the process of year or two trying to play him inside a tackle, and then it's year three by the time you kick him into guard, then you're making decisions on 50 options, and you don't really know what you have. Like, I would rather not do that. Now, you're telling me I'm picking Jordan Morgan at 25, 26, 27, the late 20s, early 30s. Okay, now my risk is different. My expectations are different. And so I'm more comfortable with, okay, he didn't work a tackle. I'm going to kick him inside and make it work there. Again, if I'm taking Jordan Morgan inside the top 12, I have a different appetite than I do at pick 26 or 27.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I don't disagree with that because you're right. If you're taking a guy in that spot, you're likely putting him where he plays. But, you know, I look at a guy, like, you know, like I said, Graham Barton's the example. You know, if you get him at 27 and, like, I watch him play tackle at Duke and he's flawless and you're thinking, well, he does have the short arms, but I'm gonna look at him. I'm going to see that does the technique make up for the lack of length? And it's not mission impossible. It's not never been done. It's just rarely done, but it's rarely done probably because guys don't get the shot to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And any of those guys you're taking – if the Jets take a tackle, he's not playing week one. Like, he's not.
Hopefully.
So,
hopefully.
Okay.
The plan is not to play in week one.
The plan is not.
Currently constructed, a tackle selected at number 10, they're not playing week one, right? So, they can learn. They can maybe have those rougher edges to their game. Now, again, I don't think they're going to take a tackle at number 10, at least not at this juncture, based on everything we're hearing. But, listen, I don't know. You guys want to hear my defensive players?
Let's go. Yeah.
All right, so I've got 1, 2, 3. I've got 5 players on the defensive side of the ball that I'm claiming here. Brandon Dorlus out of Oregon. This is probably cheating, and this will probably get me in trouble. Peyton Wilson out of NC State. I'm putting on my list. It's probably cheating, but I don't know if Glenn, you make that face. I don't know if Is he going to go in the first round?
I don't know.
Linebacker. But
There are people who think because of the injuries, you're not going to take him. Guy who's going to run to the podium and take him.
Yeah.
Tommy Eichenberg out of Ohio State.
Oh,
two
yes.
guys at the same position. Max Melton, corner out of Rutgers. And Glenn, this last one's for you. Give me Jaden Hicks, safety out of Washington State.
There you go. Listen,
those are my 5 defensive players.
I think there are better safeties in this class, at least for me, like than I had been saying leading up to, you know, up until a few weeks ago. I'm like, oh, thin safety class. But then I find myself as I'm going through my prospects, I'm like, oh, I really like Evan Williams. Oh, I really like Malik Mustafa. Oh, I really like Jaden Hicks. And I'm like, before I know it, I'm like, okay, how many guys do there have to be that I think are good before it's not a bad class? And there's probably 6 or 7 guys I'd be happy with. Hicks and Mustafa probably at the top. Well, again, Evan Williams, I would be thrilled with him. You know, there's Cole Bishop out of Utah. So there's a lot of these guys.
I've heard it's a weak safety class from like other podcasters around. Yeah. And like, I think that's kind of a misconception. Like it's not very top heavy.
Right. Because
there's so much value in the 3 to 5.
Oh, it's not a good class. It's
yeah.
there's some good players. And I like those guys I just mentioned, Bishop, and I would have Bishop up there too. Probably Bishop, Hicks, and Mustafa are probably my three favorite. And then Evan Williams, who I'd like since his Washington State days. Like, there's some good guys in there. Hicks is one of them. Eichenberg is a guy I probably haven't mentioned him much because I was such a big fan a couple years ago. I thought he was going to be like first round prospect.
And you forget about him. That's Dorlis for me. Dorlis is the same way. I watched Dorlis a couple years ago and fell in love. And then you just forget about a guy because he doesn't. Yeah. You see him and you're like, I got to wait 2 years. And then you fall in love again. That's Dorlis for me.
Yeah, exactly. And Eichenberg, I don't know if you saw, I think it was, who the hell did they play? Penn State. It was a big game, Ohio State. And they gave him the nickname Tommy Two Thumbs because he was playing with two broken thumbs and he had like 13 tackles. You know, it was, and I mean, he was all over the field. And yeah, every time I see his name, I'm like, damn, I really thought he was going to be like top 50 type guy, but just kind of fell off. Now I see him mocked in like the third and fourth round, which, if you can get him there, I'd like it. But I love Eichenberg. Peyton Wilson, obviously, like I said, that he's a guy for a few years now. Really, when he was in, I first heard of him when he was the year he was out. Someone said to me, our NC State defense is hurting because we don't have our best guy. So I said, oh, who's your best guy? And I went back to the previous year and I was like, this dude can ball. So yeah, good list, man. Good. I like it. Yeah. What do you think, Dylan?
Yeah, definitely good list. I think your linebackers are spot on for the ones that I like the most in this class. I had Peyton Wilson last week. I think he's linebacker one. Obviously, if you remove the injuries and like that type of thing, he's linebacker one based off his play on the field. But Eichenberg, definitely another gritty player. I also had Max Melton last week, so I think you just kind of watched last week and took notes on mine. Hicks, obviously, Glenn's been all over Washington State for 11 months now, it feels like. Yeah. And Dorlis,
it's his favorite college team, Washington State.
It really is. He could probably name every starter.
The thing is, though, most of the guys I like they're all going to be in the league now. So okay, that can be a reason to watch them.
Hold on. I have a very important question. Glenn, have you watched more Washington State tape or Brock Bowers tape? And answer that question honestly, because it's probably closer than you would like to admit.
Yeah, you know, it's probably, it's got to be damn near a tie. Like, I've watched so much of both of them, especially Bowers in particular. Now, I've watched enough Bowers that I don't need to go back and watch more. But I did go back this week and spend a few hours and go through every single one of his catches and take all of the downfield stuff. Because this is the thing with Twitter. Like, one person sent out a tweet saying he only catches screen passes. And I'm like, Bowers? Man, people can't possibly believe this. And then I saw it repeated over and all of a sudden, nobody said it, and then one dude says it, and like every 20 minutes, I'm seeing a tweet. You can't draft a guy who only catches screen passes. Somebody told me that on Twitter.
Well, did you hear that?
All right, man. What's that?
Did you hear he's not athletic either? Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Did you see that tweet?
Dude, he won't run the 40. What if he's slow? What if only he'd taken part in some type of athletic competition in which we could view him and figure out whether or not he's fast or not. Does anyone know if Brock Bowers has done anything related to athleticism in the past that I can view? I saw a tweet a few minutes ago. I don't know if you guys saw this. He had three runs this year, or I don't know if it was this year of his career, where he hit over 21 miles per hour. This year, not one NFL tight end did that. And in the last, I think it said in the last three seasons, I think they said Bowers has done it a total of five times. In the last three seasons, all NFL tight ends have done it three times, something like that. I'm like, do we still need him to run the 40?
He's not athletic. Like,
Yeah, come on.
I heard a scout say he watched him on TV and he looked slow.
He looks slow.
Oh, okay, well, there we go then. We'll put that down as 40 times, slow.
You got to run
the guy said so, watching him on TV.
Yeah, I knew I was going to get Glenn tonight with that Bowers thing. I knew I was going to get him.
Yep.
It's crazy. He's not athletic. He only got just – it's like
I
just make
and listen,
up more
the,
stuff.
The person whose tweet that was, I like, right? I know this person. I've met him. He's good in this space. I appreciate what he does. I just think this tweet was misguided. I just think this was not the path to go down when it came to Brock Bowers, and this is where
it that's the shame of it is so many people now it's being repeated by all these people who haven't watched him play. But you know, people are gonna do what they do.
That's the draft season for you.
Yes. Speaking of that, let's.
Okay.
Dylan. No, Dylan. Have you commented? I forgot.
Yeah, I commented on everybody.
Right, he called me a cheater. He called me a copier that I copied all of his players.
That's right. Copycat Chris. Yeah.
It's a copycat.
So, yeah. So,
if I was going to copy the show, don't you think I would have been on the show last week and have done the list? Yeah. That would have been I couldn't make the show. I was supposed to be on the show last week. I couldn't make it last minute. And so you think I then went back and was like, oh, let me just copy Dylan's list.
That he couldn't be on.
It's exactly
totally, it makes total sense. Total sense. Yeah. So real quick, we generally don't get into, you know, and this isn't really political as much as it is stupid. But talking about people believing things that aren't true reminded me, and I tweeted out a little while ago. And the funny thing is, Dylan, you and I have talked about this tweeter before, and you've not been a fan. And I'm always like, why do people hate this guy? All he does is retweet stuff, and who cares? Like, some of it has value, because let that dude follow 85,000 people on Twitter so I don't have to, and he can tweet out the stuff, you know? Anyway, Dove Kleiman, I don't know his name, but it's worth mentioning because he's got five. I looked at it earlier when he sent out this BS tweet. He's got like 488,000 followers. So no matter what you think of the guy, people are paying attention to see what he's saying. Anyway, he sent out this tweet. Aaron Rodgers did an interview where he said, you know, the normal. Pfizer is bad and Fauci was bad and blah, 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 blah. And he talked about like how Fauci was involved in the money with the HIV AIDS epidemic in the 80s, 90s. But he said nothing about like HIV being made up by the government. And that's what this dude tweeted out. He tweeted like, Aaron Rodgers says the U.S. government created HIV to spread it. And I'm like, wow, that's crazy. Let me listen to this. And I'm listening and I'm like, no, he didn't. He didn't say that. Like, I don't know. I know that Aaron Rodgers' name gets clicks. I know that's why Chris Canty and Nick Wright and Colin Cowherd, and I hate mentioning anyone else's name, but these people, like I said, they basically have made Aaron Rodgers' name their source of income. Like, no one's listening to me. No one cares what I say. Let me trash Aaron Rodgers and people will listen. Like, Canty, I don't know where these people work. And I get it. Like, they don't know where they don't know I exist. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying like they're, you know, not doing well for themselves in their space. But just lying is it's amazing to me how I feel like it was always a thing, but now it's just so normalized and everyone's so fine with it. Like, oh, yeah. It's okay that you know, they're saying this, they're claiming this guy said a thing he didn't say. It's wild. It pisses me off. You guys feel free to comment. Feel free to not comment. Totally up to you.
Look, the one thing I will say is I didn't hear the comments, right? I've seen what everybody has talked about on the internet. Now, at some point, I've been busy. I haven't been, you know, working. So I've been working. I haven't been in my normal work setup. So I haven't seen the comments. So I'm not going to comment on what Aaron Rodgers did or didn't say. What I am going to comment on is everybody reacting to what Aaron Rodgers did or didn't say. Because I'm here to tell you, this is not a shot at you, Glenn, because we've had this conversation offline.
Yeah.
I just don't have the bandwidth to care what Aaron Rodgers says on whatever podcast he's on this given week or whatever tweet he sends out. I don't have the bandwidth, okay? I do this podcast. We have a great time. We're building something special here. We're working on very hard on this every single week. I've got two jobs that I work. I've got a family. My daughter's at softball three times a week. I do not have time to dissect word by word, line by line, sentence by sentence, what Aaron Rodgers says on a podcast. He's the quarterback of my football team. Do I agree with him on everything that he says? Absolutely not. He's the quarterback of my football team. I'm going to root for my football team. If he says stupid things, I'll tell you he says stupid things. If he says things that I think aren't stupid, I'll tell you I think they aren't stupid. In this case, I didn't hear the comments, so I'm not going to speak for if he said what he said and if, you know, my thoughts on something that he may have reportedly said without hearing it myself. But at the same time, I don't care. If he thinks that, then I disagree with him and he's wrong. But okay, that's what he thinks. He says a lot of things that I don't agree with that I think are stupid. And you know what? Every time we come on the show, this is exactly what I say about it. And then we move on to the next topic.
Yeah. It's definitely not the first time I've said this either. But when he plays on the field, he's a great athlete, a great player, blah, blah, blah. Probably a great locker room teammate to his peers. But like off the field, decision-making, things like that, not always the greatest human being. I definitely don't agree with anything. Most of the things he said, I shouldn't say anything. But there's a lot of, you know, theories that go off in this guy's brain that I don't agree with. And Chris, I didn't see the tweet. I see the reaction to it, and I feel like everybody always reacts when Aaron Rodgers, it's like the easiest like buzzword to get everybody to just react, and he's an easy target. That's what I said to you guys offline. He's just such an easy target. The Jets accepted that when they traded for him. I felt like Woody didn't understand probably the full, you know, gambit of what was coming, but like everybody from national media to local media to little guys on podcasts like us, like, they're all taking their shots at Rodgers for anything he says. All the old Packers beat, like, they still talk about Rodgers all the time as if he's still in the building. So, like, he's just one of those players that drama is always going to follow him. If you just take him for his football criteria and the stuff that he does in one Jets drive in the building and that's it, that's fine. And, like, that's the approach I kind of take. And it will be nice when, like, our quarterback isn't getting his, like, you know, getting, you know, stray bullets every time he says something on a podcast. But, again, it comes with the territory that he kind of made for himself. And hopefully we just start winning goddamn football games. That's really all it comes back to, is like, just play football, win games, and hopefully it dies down a little bit.
Also, real quick, if he did say the things that people are saying he said, he has had it out for Fauci like his, like the entirety of this whole thing. So it shouldn't surprise you that that's the that, like, that's the way Rodgers would feel about certain things. So if somebody presented that to me, Glenn, if you said in our little group thread that we have when we talk about all this stuff, if you sent that in there and you're like, oh, Rodgers said this, I would have looked at it and I would have been like, yeah, that sounds like something Aaron would have said. And I would have swiped away from the phone and I would have gone back to whatever I was doing. That would have been my reaction. It is not – Aaron Rodgers can vote for whoever he wants. He can think whatever he wants. I don't care. I don't have the bandwidth for it. Neither should any of us.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I this will be the last thing on it because we don't do politics, but I liked it a lot. I feel like when I was a kid, you know, I was like fifth grade, and I remember one of our teachers explaining, like, don't ask people their politics. It's not your business. Doesn't matter who people vote for. Like, you vote for who you want to vote for. Your neighbor votes who they want to vote for. And then you have a barbecue and you don't talk about it because their vote's not your business and yours isn't theirs. And that used to be like the prevailing thought. Those days are gone. Anyway, back to football. So, Chris, those are your guys. I have a couple that I wanted to actually throw in.
Adding to your list. You created a list and you're adding to the list.
Yeah, because, you know, drafts coming. Really, one guy in particular, I wanted to get thoughts from the two of you because, as you run these mocks and the simulators, and every now and then I miss out on a quarterback. Like, you know, Rattler goes earlier than I expect, and then Jordan Travis is gone. And then I'm like, well, now I'm just going to use the last pick. And a guy who's always there with pick 257, who, and I'm always intrigued by these guys who have these sort of high ceilings where there's a ton of, these high ceiling players where there's a lot of expectations and maybe they look good for a little while, but then something happens. Either they transfer or a bunch of guys graduate and the team isn't as strong, but there's still some talent there. And the guy that I think fits into that category, and I watched some of them the other day, and it just happened to be a game where his receivers are dropping a bunch of balls. And I'm like, all right, were they a problem this year? Devin Leary out of Kentucky, right? Was NC State, came in there, big expectations, played all right. You know, wasn't Heisman worthy, but he played good. And it was, you know, he was viewed as an early to mid-round pick when the draft came around. And now he's kind of day three, round six or seven, maybe UDFA. Do you guys have any thoughts on Devin Leary? Because I'm looking at it and thinking, maybe you just wait till the sixth or seventh round, and if he's there, take him and use those earlier picks on guys who are going to play right away.
So the way you were setting it up, I thought you were going to say Keaton Slovis once you mentioned
transferring. I swear to you, I almost said two guys, but I thought, let's leave Slovis out of it, but include him, because I wanted to include him, but I was like, I'm not going to throw two names in there. But Keaton Slovis, because as I was saying it, I'm like, I'm literally describing Leary and Slovis right now. Yeah. Slovis has played for a million schools too. So both those guys, Slovis and Leary.
Yeah, Leary, I think I watched more when he was at NC State. I didn't quite follow him too much at Kentucky, but I did like what I saw from him last year at NC State. I remember pretty heavily following NC State spring game and the 2023 season or 2022 season. Slovis, I'm not turning on BYU tape for a couple more draft cycles.
You're hurt. This is how you miss on Puka Nacua. This is how you miss on Puka Nacua. You get hurt by BYU. You miss
on Gunnar Romney if he ever came out in the draft. But no, Keaton Slovis was another one. What was it, USC before he transferred to BYU? One of those, like.
He was Pitt. I think he was Pitt.
Was it Pitt? I feel like he was
at USC. I think it was USC, then USC, Pitt, then Pitt, BYU. USC,
then Pitt. Yeah. So he was there before Pickett, and then. Or I don't know, but I didn't watch Keaton since USC. I know that for a fact. And Devin Leary, I really thought would be talked about more. Maybe he didn't have a good year at Kentucky, but I thought he should have been early day three, late day two from what he put on tape at NC State.
I think the concern with these guys, and I'll talk about Leary in particular, because he was somebody going into the year that I was excited about, is when you move a bunch, you are now showing me a track record of your ability to adjust as you move and to different schemes and to different play callers, different players. You show me your ability to grow. And Leary had an opportunity to go from NC State to Kentucky and grow and show that he made improvements, to show that he was developing, to show that he was taking the step in the right direction. And he didn't. And that's concerning because with somebody, let's use another guy that is in this similar tier, probably is going to get drafted a little bit higher, Spencer Rattler. Spencer Rattler moved places and then showed the growth and then showed the ability to learn, showed the ability to develop. Leary didn't. Slovis didn't.
Yeah.
That's where I think you start to lose some of these guys is I've seen you move. I've seen you not be able to learn and adapt and develop. And that moves you down my board a little bit.
Yeah, and the funniest thing with Rattler that you brought up, just him specifically, he goes from Lincoln Riley to Shane Beamer. So, like, most people on the outside looking in would be like, oh, Lincoln Riley is the best he's going to get in terms of an offensive mind, but he was able to thrive more in Shane Beamer's system in South Carolina. So it's just interesting how that you mentioned the coaching aspect because that's important.
Better at the end of his South Carolina tenure than he was during Oklahoma with Lincoln Riley. Like that's development. That's showing that you learned something, that you took a step back, that you grew, that you matured, that you became that leader. Those are the types of things that you look for when you're taking a day three quarterback. Those are the types of intangibles you're betting on. And with Leary and with Slovis, I've just got a catalog of, in Keaton Slovis's case, okay, you were a high recruit going to USC, didn't work there. You went to Pitt, didn't really work there. Then you went to BYU, and I haven't you. To me, you were the same player you were when you got to USC, and that's where all of a sudden I go, that's not the guy I want to roll the dice on. Because if you're taking a guy on day three, I'm rolling the dice. He's an incomplete player. He's rough around the edges. I want to take a guy who's rough around the edges, but I know is a leader, that I know has matured, that has faced some adversity, that I think if I get him in my environment, in my building, I'm going to be able to take that, turn it up to 12, and then unleash him a couple years down the road.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, Leary's a guy that I saw a bit, and I think he's got enough. I think the arm strength, the accuracy, I think there's enough there to work with to consider taking him, especially, again, if you're getting him that late. But it's an interesting question with college quarterbacks. When these guys switch schools, especially now with it being as common as it is, it's like, how much do you hold? Like, here's a perfect example, and this will be, you know, more to do with next year's draft, of course. But it's something to keep an eye on, right? A guy we love, Chris, and Dylan, I think you like him too from what you've seen, Cam Ward.
Oh, right? Yeah.
You know, I thought if this guy comes out, he's going to be a top 50 pick. He can do so much, does it well, protects the football, strong arm, all that stuff. It looks like he's going to come out, then he's just going back to school. Now he's down to Miami. He's going to start in Miami. And I'm looking at him thinking, how do you react if he has a terrible season? Is it, you know, sometimes maybe a kid goes somewhere and they underestimate, like, how long it's going to take them to click in that offense. Or maybe they don't fit the way they thought they would. Like, is he a worse quarterback if the production is worse? Or did he sort of leave a situation where he fit and went to one where he didn't, and now he hurt his draft? Because that's what could happen. Like, you could see guys who are – I mean, if he would have gone back to Washington State and stayed in the same offense and probably would have helped himself out a lot more. But to your point, Chris, if he goes to Miami and he thrives – it's like, oh, look, picked up another system, picked it up quick, fit right in, no hiccups. I get that. But how much do you hold it against the guy when you say, well, maybe his biggest mistake was thinking he was a good fit there, and he wasn't, and that's why he flopped. Now is he a round six pick now when last year he was a round two pick? I mean, hold on. I sure hope so when the Jets get
Hold on. Let's be fair. Because we were talking about Dennis Leary and Keaton Slovis, and I wouldn't put those two guys anywhere near the raw talent that Cam Ward has.
No.
So there's a raw talent component to this too, right?
Right. If you part have of the equation, of course.
Right. And so in this example where we bring up Cam Ward, the raw talent is always going to be something that I think people are drawn towards that I don't think Dennis Leary or Keaton Slovis have.
Devin Leary.
You can understand why that mistake was made.
Of course.
We're talking about Keaton Slovis, then, you know, Devin Leary, whatever.
Yeah. Like Dennis Leary, underrated comedian. You know, it took a while for him to grow on me. Didn't love him right away, but
he's okay. Yeah, he's funny.
I don't know if he's a good quarterback, but he's but yeah, it's just like that was my first thought when Cam announced he was going to Miami. I thought, is this guy gonna hurt his draft stock?
It's a gamble.
Like if he has a bad season,
yeah,
you know,
I think the reward is worth the risk for him because, like Chris said, he has the raw talent and the traits that he can fall back on that can help him survive at quarterback. Where if he goes to Miami and he's not asked to do exactly what he was asked to do at Washington State and there's an adjustment period or he doesn't necessarily vibe with that style of offense, which is always a possibility,
right?
Then, yeah, it might hurt his draft stock. But like Chris said, everything you can fall back on, the traits and everything, I think that's going to keep him alive as like even like he's got to be a top 150 pick. Like regardless,
you would imagine,
like,
yeah,
you would have to imagine, right? Unless he just
I guess that was my main question. It's like how much do you hold it against the guy if they transfer and things don't work well there? You know, and I know it's got to be case by case, obviously.
Yeah, it definitely is. And with quarterbacks, I think it's more specifically like fine-tuned case by case. But when you have a player like Cam Ward, I think, yeah, you don't really hurt the stock unless you fall off a cliff and like your arm just dies or something.
And I think this is what makes the Cam Ward situation really unique. And there's a bias here of how much we love Cam Ward. Where's Cam Ward playing football? If he doesn't go to Miami, where's he playing? Washington State.
Yeah.
Who's not in the Pac-12 anymore.
Right.
That matters. So mm-hmm. I think Cam viewed it as an opportunity to get in front of some better competition than what he would have played if he stayed at Washington State. Now, it's a gamble. It's a risk, but I can certainly understand it. I can certainly understand a player going, I don't want to stay at Washington State, but we're not in a conference anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's a tough sell. Tough sell. But I think that covers it. I think we're good for tonight. We got the draft right around the corner.
We got a long 2 days next week, a big show on Wednesday to get us ready, and then Thursday, marathon. Get your popcorn. By the way, gentlemen, we haven't talked about this, but I did not get the day off. So you see where I'm at. I'm at work right now. I'm gonna get in the car and I'm gonna drive the speed limit all the way to my house. And so you guys might have to start the draft show a little bit without me, but I promise you I will be there before like pick three at the latest.
Yeah, that's fine. You know, I don't foresee the Jets trading up.
And most of those teams are told to take the whole 10 minutes that they're allotted to make.
Well, and the draft never starts on time. It doesn't start exactly at
around Caleb Williams.
Commissioner comes out, he brings out the military to try to get them to not boo him. It doesn't work. They boo him anyway. And then they do the Star Spangled Banner. And it'll be a little while. So, draft 10 days away, 10, 9, whatever eight. It is. And we'll be it should be eight, right?
Eight days away.
Jesus, man. I don't know if I'm going to get everybody watched. You know what it is? I'm digging like deep. I'm looking at like guys where that can't even tell who they are on the damn film. Like, I think that's number 9. I'm not sure, but trying to get as many prospects just to at least get an idea. Some of these dudes, but 8 days away, NFL draft, Jets picking 10th. We shall see. Let the let the online rage draft arguments come to an end 9 days from now. Anything to add, gentlemen?
No, I am excited for the banter to stop, though. Like, it's quite a lot. And I'm not on Twitter as much as I was last draft cycle. And it's still like I log on and I'm like, guys, why are we arguing over pick 10 still? Like, let's talk about 72, 111, 134. Like, let's talk about other picks. And I understand everything's based off pick 10, but come on, we got to move past it. There's more than one pick. We've hammered that point home so many times. But
excited. I'll tell you what, though. I am going to be not a happy person when the Packers are making that Jets pick in the second round.
Oh, yeah.
And, especially
I'm going to take one of our guys
who's on the board.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, just anyway, have a good one, Jets fans.